Now, in the last few months, in the immediate aftermath of horrific mass shootings and killings that have occurred in the US and Europe, commentators have often been quick to label the perpetrators of these incidents as mentally ill. But my next guest says the connection between violence and mental illness is far more complicated and nuanced than it's frequently made out to be. And he says the association between the two is one of many mythologies around mental health that is doing great harm to the community. Mark Bryant is program manager at MindFrame, which is managed by the Hunter Institute for Mental Health. And for the last 18 years, the organisation has worked to encourage responsible, accurate and sensitive representation of mental illness and suicide in the mainstream media. And it's the only organisation in the world that's specifically dedicated to this mission. Mark, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Now, what do you see as some of the common misunderstandings around mental illness that appear in the media?
Well, first of all, I'd just like to say that the Australian media, by and large, actually report mental illness responsibly. So I think that's important to get up there first. We shouldn't demonise the media, because I'm actually an ex-former journalist myself many years ago in the 90s. I think some of the things that we're talking about, the main myths that come along, is that people who are mentally ill are violent, dangerous, untrustworthy and unpredictable, when the facts tell us that many violent people have no history of mental illness, and that most people with mental illness have no history of violence, and also that people with a mental illness are much more likely to be victims of violence and crime than the perpetrators. So that's important. And also there's a myth around people are unable to recover, all mental illnesses are the same, cultural groups are more likely than others to experience mental illness, those kind of things.
Well, let's take a look at mental health and violence. How did that connection, if it's not accurate, how did that connection come to be, and why does it go by unchallenged often?
I think it does get challenged today. I think mainly when people commit acts of violence and things that, you know, that upset the community, and the community wants to understand why, the media in a colloquial sense will try to explain really complex issues and try to tell the community of like, why these things have happened. And I think as we look at like monstrous murderous acts, it's kind of, well, they can't be like us, that's why they've behaved that way, which is true, that obviously people are not actually quite right-minded as the general population, but it usually has no connection to mental illness. And that's where the danger comes in, is that where the media commentators, not just the media, but the sources. So if they're not talking to a qualified clinician, they're actually talking to someone who works from industry and says, well, the person, or if the police officer says the person was obviously mentally ill, deranged, that kind of thing. But in Australia, we're the only country that actually works with the police around their language when they come into incidences of people of poor behaviour. So they're very mindful of the language that they use in their press conferences, in press releases, that kind of thing.
And how important is it, particularly right at those really crucial moments, that a senior police officer or a minister for police steps up and is really clear about exactly what we do and don't know?
Yeah, no, it's really, really important that when they're trying to describe an incident that's happened, particularly as we're seeing some of the incidences around the world, particularly mass shootings that are coming out from the United States and the incidences in France. Look, these are people who are not, you know, not everyone thinks the same. We're human beings, but things like around violence tends to be learned behavior. It's what we kind of learn from our environments, particularly from a young age. If you're exposed to extreme trauma and violence in your cohorts, in your training, you know, we train soldiers to fight. They don't naturally know how to fight, you know, and that kind of thing. So it's really important that the media are able to explain that someone's obviously not in the right mind. There's something's happened to them to push them over the limit, that they're quite violent. But that doesn't mean to say that someone who's violent can't have a mental illness, the same as they could have a broken arm or a common cold. It's usually an association, not a causal factor. I'm not saying that there might be some really rare incidences where someone has committed an act where they may have had psychosis, or particularly if they're on drugs, drug-induced psychosis, but by and large, people who act violently are violent people.
And when those words get used interchangeably, inaccurately, as if deranged is the same thing, what do you see, what do you know is the impact of that sort of misrepresentation or insensitive reporting on issues around mental health? What are some of the ripple effects that come from that?
Well, the ripple effect is that mental illness is really common. One in five people are experiencing mental illness in a 12-month period. We think up to half the population will experience a mental illness. So that means that family members, friends, almost the whole population, it's a normal thing. But the danger is that people don't seek help because they may be starting to have feelings of the beginnings of signs of a mental illness, anxiety, depression, any range. And we know that the earlier people seek help, the quicker the recovery. And if they're holding out for 5-10 years, you know, they're stoics, you know, that masculine culture of, you know, I'll use other things to keep my head in a good place, the harder it will become to the recovery. And we have quite high suicide rates in Australia. Lots of work's been done, but we still have stubbornly high suicide rates in males. And majority of those people that do take their own life have never come into contact with health services. So that shows you that there's a barrier. And if stigma is creating a barrier for people seeking help because they'll be judged to be a violent person, can't do their job properly. You know, if one in five people are experiencing a mental illness in a 12-month period, there's quite a lot of us, including in newsrooms, that are living, having productive, successful lives, but having treatment, living with a mental illness. And that's what's really important, that people are able to talk about their issues.
Mark Bryant is the program manager at MindFrame, the only organisation in the world that's specifically dedicated to this mission. Love to hear from you this afternoon, though. What's your sense of how good a job the Australian media does when it comes to talking about mental health, mental illness? 0418 226 576, or you can go to Facebook and share your views that way. Now, you were talking there about suicide, Mark. Tell us specifically about some of the changes that have come into place in Australia in the last 10, 20 years when it comes to reporting suicide.
Yeah, the World Health Organization actually highlighted the Australian media in 2014 as being one of the only countries that's seen a behaviour change in the media reporting. And that's not that sometimes and often a myth that the Australian media don't report suicide and it's a taboo subject. They report it extensively, and our studies show that they've increased it more than twofold in the last 15 to 16 years. What's been fascinating is the Australian media have not only increased their reporting, but the quality has improved significantly. Professor Jane Perkis from the University of Melbourne, who sits on the media task force for the World Health Organization, her media monitoring study of a baseline in 2001 and in 2007 showed a quality score jump from 57% to 75%. And that means that the media, through what MindFrame does, is capacity building. We train and educate. We don't just hand out resources and say, these are good ways of reporting. We're in curriculum resources in universities. We go into newsrooms. We've got champions at ABC. So the media kind of, it's in their culture. A lot of journalists, when I go and do newsrooms, already know what I'm talking about, but knowing it's coming from MindFrame. So that 75% quality score showed that journalists are more likely to put help-seeking information, leave out gratuitous methods of suicide, which we know is linked with contagion. And this culminated when tragically Robin Williams died. The Australian media was that sophisticated. They focused on grief and loss. What's depression? We had agencies like Beyond Blue, Lifeline, filling the discussion, filling the narrative, and people feeling validated to talk about their feelings. Whereas you looked in the UK, where I was a journalist in the 90s, it's quite embarrassing. They still focus on the method, how he died, the gory detail, sensationalist reporting, which we know is associated with increased risk in the community for those with suicide ideation.
And even words, Mark, like describing a suicide as a successful suicide, that is absolutely not best practice, is it, when it comes to reporting?
Yeah, look, some of this, like when we're talking about our evidence base to support this, we're kind of like looking at the people that are holding on. They're looking for their protective factors. And some of the protective factors are that it's not normal to take your own life. And so language that presents suicide as the desired outcome, like successful, it's like a layers of different language. We've also got things like committed suicide. That word, you know, not every person bereaved or a survivor is going to be offended, but for someone who's in a family that are thinking, this year I want to talk on when it comes to the anniversary, because when the anniversary comes, I'm feeling at risk myself. But if that association with risk, sin and crime, it puts that shame, and we want to remove that shame for the discussion of suicide. And the media, they are our change agents in the community. We know that from our evidence-based media changes behavior. And if the media can model good behavior, and we're not talking about being politically correct, we're talking about really changing the way that people feel about a really significant issue.
And understanding that duty of care that the media has in some ways. It's interesting, Mark, you comment there on using the phrase committing suicide. Still a crime is someone has texted in with a question mark there. There's not enough assistance messages for those in crisis at the time. And they've also said the media, in their experience, the media constantly refers to phrases like split personalities, in reference to people who are vastly differing public personas. Multiple personalities are in fact rare, and I'm schizo is a cop-out, says this person. People with a mental illness are more likely to suffer violence than cause it. So I guess that really coming through there from a listener, their experience, that experience of hearing those sorts of phrases get used incorrectly, that it can be incredibly distressing for people.
Yeah, it is. It's become a lot rarer in Australia, but when it does happen on those rare occasions, because most of the time the media are reporting really well, what happens is that we would encourage people to either let us know, or they can contact the SANE Stigma Watch Centre. And it's not about telling off the media. We want to change behaviour. So SANE Stigma Watch will contact the journalist or the newsroom. The media here, we're talking even the tabloid media, they respond really well. They say, well, look, something slipped through, we'll change the online version, tell us a little bit more about how we can change our language. Like the things like schizophrenia, psychosis is probably the most stigmatized mental illness in the media, because usually when someone with schizophrenia that comes into contact with media, it's usually through the courts or where someone's had a psychotic episode, and we had that in Hornsby recently, and some of the media reporting wasn't too good, and we did follow up with some of the media and say, look, this will go on for a while, but using words like a escaped mental health patient, you know, he was on day release, he was having psychosis, he was a danger to himself, you know, that kind of thing was really important to get across. The media were receptive to that as well.
And you know, some journalists might be new in the field, and to have those sort of feedback mechanisms, to hear you saying that SANE Australia has that stigma watch is pleasing to me to hear this. Look, time is racing by, but I just wanted to quickly check in with you. You mentioned police, but you also provide some guidelines for people who are involved in film and TV and stage as well, because those messages can have a big impact on the community.
Yeah, it's a smaller body of evidence, but the fictional portrayals we know has a significant impact on people's reaction to mental illness. So using the same kind of training, we work with script writers at the Australian Script Writers Guild, and we develop resources for those who are doing the production to how they steps they can take to ensure that they're authentic but real and good narratives to help the community in their presentation. And we've had an amazing response from the creative industry. We often do workshops with script writers. We support, you know, like some of the soap operas. Sydney Theatre Company did a rural mental health feature where they went out to rural communities with a play about a farmer that was going through tough times. They did have a really bad ending, and they had a conversation with us, and we spoke to the script writer, and they had this really powerful ending where the farmer did go into his shed. He was contemplating suicide, but he turned around and went back and spoke to his wife and reached out, and she listened to his problems, and they went out, then went to seek help. So it was a really powerful way of breaking down that stigma of reaching out, which is really important.
Mark, I appreciate you making time to talk to us this afternoon. It's a really valuable discussion to be having on the radio, reflecting on the media more generally. And we will put some links up on our website later on for all these various locations, for SANE, Stigma Watch, but also for your organisation, MindFrame, that's part of the Hunter Institute of Mental Health. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Angela.
And in keeping with what's good practice, if any of the content we've been talking about has stirred things up for you, you can always contact Lifeline on 131114 and Beyond Blue 1300224636. And interesting to read some of MindFrame's materials there, that Australia really on the forefront of this in terms of the media taking that help-seeking approach, publishing those lists after the phone numbers, after stories that you hear on the radio and see on the television. Let us know what your experience is, though. You might have heard some reporting that you found very distressing and insensitive. Happy to hear from you. 1-4-0-4-1-8 226-576. And a few of your texts coming in, someone saying, fabulous guest speaker. Thank you. Our pleasure. Useful to hear from people like Mark in this line of work. Also, thank you for this conversation. I think one of the worst negatives on mental health that the media create is the continued reporting of really negative but incredibly non-essential news. I don't know about the gruesome murder, horrible car accident, violent home invasion, unless the police need community help or want to give the community a warning, almost all the time it doesn't need to apply. So it's just negative stuff. I suffer from PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, says this person, and can barely listen to the news and much current affairs these days. It's so pointless, negative, and distressing. I have music for you in just a moment.